This FPL season has definitely been go, go, go. A nonstop hustle all the time. Matches, deadlines, unexpected blank and double game weeks, on top of everything the real world has had in store. Sometimes you need a moment to turn off and hit reset. That's when you reach for Coors Light. It's made to chill. For me personally, supporting Fulham during this last year has been a true roller coaster ride. Honestly, when that Adama Traore goal flew past Areola in the 92nd minute of game week 31, the only thing that saved my mental state, the only thing that calmed my nerves, was cracking open a Coors Light. There's only one beer out there that's literally made to chill, and that's Coors Light. The mountains on the bottles and cans even turn blue when your beer is cold. That way, you always know when it's time to chill. When you need to hit reset, just open a Coors Light. It's mountain cold refreshment made to chill. And listen, everyone, summer is pretty much here. It's about to get hot in New York. An ice-cold Coors Light is such a perfect way for me to beat that summertime heat. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light and the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. And as always, celebrate.
Hail cheaters and welcome to the Always Cheating Fantasy Premier League podcast. My name is Josh. I'm here with Brandon. Brandon, this is like our ninth time doing the intro. Do you think we can finally pull it off?
I think so. I mean, it has been said that it's tough to podcast when there's basically nothing to talk about. The season is over. I feel so relieved. I feel somewhat aggrieved, but also relieved. Yeah. So I think we should just quickly talk about how we ended up in this season, how we feel about that. And then we have a whole podcast full of feedback from our listeners about lessons we learned this season and ways in which we blame ourselves for how we did the season and ways in which we blame the FPL game for how we did.
It's much more fun to blame the game, obviously. Yeah, I feel right now it's a little bit like school's out and we're the teachers and we're still like grading papers, you know, while everyone's outside, you know, playing, you know, baseball in the yard or whatever.
Yeah, but we still have, you know, wry grins on our face as we hear our listeners playing outside.
Exactly. It is like thunder showering in New York right now, so it does make it easier to, it doesn't feel like summer outside.
Do you think it's raining just to clean the streets of all the FPL gunk that's been accumulating?
I think so. I think Jan Vertonghen and Federico Fernandez are both in the gutter somewhere. So game week 38, you know, let's not, there's no point in doing too much of a recap here, but you know, how was your game week 38? How did things wrap up for you on the season? How do you feel about your season, Brandon?
Yeah, the game week 38 was a bit of a whimper. I took a -4 and I brought in Mo Salah, which was a net gain. I dropped Mahrez, but here's the deal. I dropped Mahrez, who, of course, turns heel on me. But I would not have captained Mahrez. I probably would have captained Aubameyang. So ultimately, it turned out to be a net gain. And then I brought in a bench goalkeeper, Adrian, who I ended up playing Fabianski, who got a penalty save. How glorious. But yeah, 63 points on the game week. I thought that was going to be decent. But then, I mean, given the game week average was 49, but starting off the week at 96K, 63 points just was not enough to keep me in the top 100. And my overall rank on the season was 112K and change, which was really the most gutting part of the entire season.
You've been in the top 100K like almost the whole year, right?
Well, actually, maybe I've been in the top 100K only 3 or 4 weeks this season. But I was on that sort of, we can get into this later on the podcast, but I just had so many stumbling blocks early in the season, you know, like 5 million game week rankings that really gave me so much ground to cover. But I have never finished outside the top 75K, I mean, at least in the last 6 seasons. So it's just going to be hard for me to go back and look at my game week history page and see an extra digit there. Six digits instead of five digits on my season history. So it was just like an unglamorous, unremarkable season for me in the end. And the only highlight was me beating you in our head-to-head competition. But I'll throw it over to you then, because you actually ended up finishing with a better overall rank than
me. It's a small consolation. I also know like a third of the people in our league have not given you cash yet, so I felt a little better just you're down to two? Okay,
down to two people in our private league who owe me money. And if you're listening, pony up.
You beat me in the head to head, which, you know, you actually did that last week. I had a weird season, kind of like yours too, where I had these, some fantastic game weeks. You know, I actually had a great start to the season. I was, 24K after the first week. And I really hung around that top, I was between 10 and 20K for a while there. And then right around Christmas time, it really fell apart for me. Sunk down to about 300,000 and ended up the season on 83K, which feels like it felt good to claw back a little bit, and I feel like if I had a little more luck, I would have I could have done even better. My last game, and I don't really want to talk about it. It's funny because in my head, I'm thinking of people who are going to listen to this podcast in 6 weeks, and they're going to hear us talking about game week 38, and they're going to be like, "What is I can't remember who just won the World Cup game 2 days before, let alone game week 38." Federico Fernandez didn't play at all. Jan Vertonghen didn't play at all. 1 point from Son. Jordan Ayew, just a terrible transfer, especially because I was debating between Jose Perez and Ayew, and just missed so many chances. Yeah, just all these little things that I felt like this was one of those years where when I had a 50-50 choice between X player and Y player, I picked the wrong player every time, And I know that I know it's easier to remember the things that went badly.
Exactly. I started making a list in preparation for this pod of bad transfers I made. So bringing in Mahrez on my wild card, and he did nothing. Walcott, Lingard after he was done with his goal scoring spurt, Sané when he was in a downturn, Sterling the second time around. After I made that list, I started to remember, wait, I brought in Nacho Monreal when he scored two or three games running. I had Pascal. I dropped Pascal Gross immediately when he went into a cold spell. I had KDB during his great early run, De Gea from game week one. So on balance, well, there was balance there. What was missing, I think, for both of us was some kind of cutting edge.
The one thing I will say is I successfully did a -8 in game week 38, which I am, as any long-time listeners will know, I'm just not a huge hit person in general. I just don't think that I don't know. I just, for me, it's not quite the right approach. I actually wonder if the approach really is to take massive, massive hits instead of just little dinky hits. If you completely remake your team, there's a real chance to do a net, but just a little -4 at a time can really hurt you. And in fact, we're going to talk in a minute about that.
I was just going to say, I'm jumping ahead.
No, it's okay. I brought in Zaha, Adrian, and Long. And were you a little surprised that Burnley lost that clean sheet? I was certain they were going to hold on to that. I was shocked.
Yeah, I was certain. But then again, you say Bournemouth are the comeback kings. The comeback Josh Kings. They always score two goals in the last 10 minutes. So in that respect. True. And Burnley, for those who have been heavily invested in Burnley defense all season, we know that it's a mirage that they're a clean sheet factory. This is not true.
It's really it's all the clean sheets were in the first half of the season, weren't they? We have two things we're going to talk about in this podcast. Brendan, you mentioned them a little bit earlier, but just to remind people, it's two things. One is, looking ahead to next season. One is, what do you want to do differently as a manager? Can we really change as managers? Are we too, or is the way we play FPL just reflect our personality too much? And the second question
you sound like my wife right now.
And the second question is, what would you change about the game itself? So bonus points, transfers, chips, things like that. What would you change there? So we're going to get to those in just a moment. It's going to be a shorter podcast than usual. Obviously, we don't have anything to recap or preview here. But before we do that, Brandon, let's take a quick look at our leagues, Brandon. You had many leagues, and we have so many leagues we couldn't even run through all the. We need a separate podcast to go through all of the various leagues.
But we're almost under the sea. We have so many leagues here. If that might be the most dad joke I have ever made on this podcast.
I just made a melancholy and even sadness joke. So we're really going full dad this podcast. We should read the top 10 of the Always Cheating Super League. Before we do, just a quick shout out to Jeremiah Johnson, who won both the Always Cheating Patreon Supporters League, and he also won the Always Cheating Patreon Head-to-Head League. Yeah. So great late run for him. Actually, FPL General was leading that Patreon Supporter League for a long time.
Yeah.
Congratulations, Jeremiah and Mark and Fahad, who finished in third.
We have to congratulate Mark for he managed to achieve his goal of his third top 500 finish in four seasons. So that's huge for Mark. Congrats to you.
It's extra. It makes all of us feel a little guilty when we talk about how how unlucky we were or whatever. It's like, well, if we could actually just be playing this
maybe game, we're doing it wrong.
Yeah, exactly. And then I did want to also congratulate Jan Spernage. I feel like I'm not saying that correctly, and I'm sorry, Jan. Jan, just tell us how to pronounce it, and then we'll make sure we don't pronounce it incorrectly again.
Yeah.
But Jan finished first in the Always Cheating Second Half League, so congratulations to you. And that was the Patreon link. So the Always Cheating Super League top 10, Brandon, why don't you read off the top 10?
Yeah, let me take it away here. Creeping up into the top 10 at the last possible game week, it's Morian Retner, Randomometers was his team name. Ninth place, Nick Tuthope, Football Friend FC. Eighth place, it's Stevie Sunshine, Cruise Control. Seventh place, 420 Fedora Fanatics, we'll see. Sixth place, Jeremiah Johnson, Lookman Ayuake. Fifth place, it's Graham Chester United, Graham McDonald. And in fourth place, it's Joe Stone for Fuchs Ake, IU Blend. Could that possibly be the last time we say that team name on this podcast, Josh? Up to third place, Adrian Falk Revdal, Bodillos. Second place, Jamal Rice. And in first place, finishing 17 overall in the world, it's Prakhar Patel, Crazy Coutinho. Congratulations, Prakhar. You have gone in the Always Cheating Super League Hall of Fame, which is at alwayscheating.com under the league tab. We must get upwards of 5 to 6 hits per month on that page.
Yeah, and Prakhar, we would love to have you on the podcast. We actually don't know how to get in touch with you though. You're not one of these crazy social media types that we are. At least I don't know. You could be like FPL, whatever, FPL ant or something. Just trying to think of some creature that doesn't already have a
hashtag FPL zoo.
That's Twitter.
How long how long until they have a chat function through the fantasy.premierleague.com site where we can just message Prakhar?
That's actually true. I know. I wish there was an easier way to do that. You can't really search through leagues either. It's actually, at this point, I don't even know how many people we have in our league because you would just have to keep scrolling through. You can't get the data for that, which is
I occasionally poke around. We have more than 2,500 people in the Super League and growing. Right. So to whoever finished 2,500 with minus 5,000 points, good job for you for making the most transfers of all time.
Right, exactly. So all right, congrats to everybody. And Brandon, let's take a quick break. Just before we do, a reminder, we are running a World Cup game for our Patreon supporters. That game is available. Just visit patreon.com/alwayscheating to sign up. It's going to be, we have 8 groups. You're going to pick one team from each group, and then we have a point system. It's all laid out on the Patreon page. I think we actually have one incorrect CONCACAF team in there. So uh-oh, we have to redo that chart. But the chart still stays. We'll clean it all up before the World Cup starts. But
that's the first mistake we've ever made at Always Cheating.
Just get into that chart. Get into the nice CONCACAF chart. That was like, 2 weeks of like back and forth emails between us, like to figure out how the hell to do it. So
I think the thing we can stress though about the idea of playing this Patreon exclusive game is we wanted to take a little bit of the FPL stress away. So to play this FPL game, all you're doing is picking teams at the very start of the tournament. Then you just kick back and root for your team to win. You're not picking players, making exactly. captain choices. So it should be a lot of fun and just a joy to play while you watch the tournament unfold.
Yeah, it'll be a nice mix. We actually will be podcasting during the World Cup as well, so keep an eye out for those podcasts. And it'll be a mix because you'll be able to do the our game, and then if you need that, you know, that daily fix, that daily Jones, you'll be able to use starting 11 as well. And so we'll talk a little bit more about them later.
Great. So yeah, let's take a quick break and come back and talk about things we can do differently at the start of the 2018-19 season.
Great.
Same old podcast, always cheating.
We're back, Josh, and part one of the pod is going to be lessons learned. We put out the call to our listeners about things they learned from playing this very tricky season, and I think our job is going to be how to figure out how to apply these lessons to the 2018-19 season. So we'll kick things off with a comment from Mike Mulcahy, who says, I had my best game weeks when I played five midfielders. I would use the 3-5-2 template starting in game week one next season and not wait until game week 11. So I think this season will probably be remembered for the 3-5-2 formation. Strikers were so difficult to come by. And the ones that were really performing were incredibly expensive. There was Lukaku really early on. Then you get to Kane as well. There was no mid-price striker or cheap striker.
Yeah. And it felt like they were all like, one guy would be firing and the other person would be injured. There was never a time when you wanted like a really, or very few times at least, when you wanted a very expensive strike force. Maybe when Firmino was a little cheaper, which he was for a little while there. You could go with the big three. But in general, I think if I have, you know, one of my biggest regrets for the season was not doing 3-5-2 more often because, this year was the season when you had just a bunch of, what in hindsight were forwards who are classified as midfielders, right?
Sure. I mean, Arnautović,
Sterling, Salah, right? Yeah. I mean, you can call Sterling a forward or not, but he was certainly playing he played as a forward at times for sure.
I think we have a few more comments about formations in the how can we change the game portion of the show, so we can talk more about that. But I think the in hindsight, this season, you were going to do really well if that you were able to rotate the fifth midfielder accordingly, like right. Jesse Lingard, Pascal Gross, and guys like this who are around the 6 million price point where they had flurries 2 or 3 weeks at a time. And if you got them right at the right time, you'd really benefit from the 3-5-2.
Yeah, I mean, it was just a disastrous season for third strikers. I mean, there was just never a great option that emerged. Just very small pockets of time. You know, I mean, Charlie Austin never, all year long, we were kind of waiting for Charlie Austin to go. It was funny how he didn't, like, no one wants to dislike Charlie Austin.
Yeah.
If you notice, like, there's no bitterness around Charlie. A lot of top managers brought him in for, like, the doubles. And I think he picked up, like, one assist, you know, like, down the stretch. I mean, he just didn't really do anything. And
well, yeah, it's funny. You watch, I think it was the whatever fixture they had, the penultimate fixture they had, where Charlie Austin had a couple of scissor kicks that were, I think one was ill taken and off target, but was still great technique. And the other one was the assist to Gabbiadini's goal. He was out there trying so hard wasn't scoring goals.
He seems like it seems like he tries hard, but I brought in Callum Wilson at the wrong time, brought in Andre Ayew at the wrong time. Maybe a good lesson for next year is if a team can't score goals, don't bring in any of their players, you know, to score goals for you. Because if there's one thing you could say about Swansea this year, it was that they couldn't score any goals, right? Yeah. I mean, they just, you know, I mean, Andy King was the only player who could come through for them in game week 38, you know, a mid-season, you know, loan deal, or I don't know I don't think it was a transfer.
When you're a season where you're basically trying to create magic out of brothers, some people could probably point to I don't know if the Neville brothers created some high flying
wonderful
FPL
songs,
magic.
That's for sure. Tell it like it is, Brandon. Beautiful song by Aaron Neville.
Yeah. But we were talking about Burnley's defense earlier. It was funny how the second half of the season, FPL-wise, Burnley switched to an attacking team where Wood and Barnes were great enablers for if you were playing 3-4-3, and they were actually scoring goals more than they were keeping clean sheets.
Yeah, Barnes came on late. You're right, but in general, yeah, it was definitely a great year for a 3-5-2 and just sticking some like Peter Crouch type, you know, on your bench.
Quainar.
Yeah, for a while there. Yeah, exactly. That was a weird. This is like also the year when Huddersfield like was the most unsatisfying FPL team, like outside of maybe Jonas Lossel.
Yeah. They were a bad date.
I know, and they're back next year. I'm happy for David Wagner. I'm happy for that club because obviously it's just amazing that they stayed up, that they got promoted at all. But I do hope they're a little more fun next year. I don't know that I had a ton of fun watching them play this year. Maybe when they beat Man United, that was cool. But other than that, yeah. FPL Nick says always have bench subs who play. There is definitely value in the 4 to 5 million bracket. Just good, useful and true advice, I'd say.
Yeah. Did we struggle for, premium defenders this season? I mean, like Alonso had a spell mid season where he was just pure gold, but beyond that, I think people were getting frustrated with the higher priced defenders. Was it like rotation of Man City defenders or, Spurs not being able to keep clean sheets for a long time? And I think we came back to this idea of just spend as little money as possible in your back line, and or spend all that money in your goalkeeper. It was the David De Gea season.
Yeah. I mean, or maybe like find a couple solid, rock solid. You know, I'm looking right now at some of the top scoring defenders for the season. I mean, you know, Jamal Lascelles was, you know, I think he started the season at 4.5 million. He is the team captain, right, for Newcastle? I think he is.
He is.
You know, played, you know, okay, sometimes they get injured, but, you know, ultimately, you know, and you could even, you know, if it's your fifth defender, you can stash him for, you know, for those 4 or 5 weeks he's out. But he played, you know, virtually every single game this year that he was healthy, which I think was like 35 or 38 matches, you know, finished with 3 goals, 9 bonus points, you know, 116 points overall. That's just, you know, you can just find people of quality and then just stick them on your bench. And, you know, that's just a lot better than like these kind of unbalanced teams. We've got these, you know, like, you know, you had Stankovic, right? For like, you know, did they think that really hurt you or like, well, certainly like you couldn't rotate at all.
Yeah. I don't think I ever was hurt because of Stankovic. That was the, yeah. I mean, in an ideal world, everyone on your bench plays and that offers you the best rotation. But I always end up in this position going into game week one where I take the red flagged player who has the least chance of their value dropping. So a 4.0 red flag defender, sit him in the last position on the bench, and that gives you usually an extra 0.5 to play around with, and you're running as little risk as possible of losing value on that bench player. Now, of course, that's faulty logic because even Stankovic, a red flagged nothing defender from Huddersfield, even ended up at 3.9 about, you know, 18 game weeks into the season.
Yeah. How about Ahmed Hegazi? Just a classic. Like, I brought him in early, and then it was just, if you listen back to like the first couple weeks of the podcast last season, it was this guy is getting dropped. It's just he's filling in for McCauley. He played every minute of every game this season. Finished, he closed the season with 7-1, 8-6-1. I mean, you know, he was doing it all year, man. It's kind of crazy.
Was.
Like
was,
10 clean sheets, 2 goals, 11 bonus points. All this a very solid season for Gazi.
All this about premium defenders, though, I guess we have to walk it back a little bit. If you look at the stats page, the top 11 defenders, not a one is below 5.7 million. So I guess that's another strategy question that we have to address later on in the pod is the idea of taking premium assets and just being patient with them.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you know, but the issue there is that you look at the top scoring defenders and you're looking at, you know, Azpilicueta is the top at 175, then it's 165, 156, 146 in terms of total points. You know, you look at midfielders, you know, even the ones that are closer in price to them, I mean, they're finishing on, you know, 40, 50 points more than these players are. So it's just so much more money that you can get, like, or so many more, like, just points that you can get on a midfielders that You're going to always need some cheap defenders.
Yeah. All right. The next comment comes from Josh Clem, who says, err toward leaving money in the bank to reduce need for hits late. So did you find yourself in any position, say, in the last 8 to 10 weeks of not having enough money in your bank to get the players that you wanted?
Oh, always. You know, yeah. I always want to do the mental math to go back and, like, remember the mistake I made. This was definitely the season where by the second half of the season, I was not following price rises and falls very much. Do think it's, you know, we actually asked this, we asked FBL General about this when he was on the podcast, and he sort of said as much, you know, that the first half of the season, he's paying a little more attention. And then by the end, it's kind of like next one up, you know, it's like, you just sort of, you got the money you've got, you know, assuming that you've got a, you know, decent team and you don't have some like red flag player who's just falling like a stone. You know, and it did feel especially swingy price rises this year. Don't you feel that way? Don't you feel
like it totally was, agree. Yeah.
Yeah. It was so it got so swingy. It was hard to really get too worked up about it because it was like, you know, Mo Salah would rise. He would rise and fall like back to back days.
You know? And then there was Lukaku was, you know, he was always predicted to fall in price and he never did. So it's like when you thought maybe they wouldn't drop, they dropped. When you thought they would, they didn't.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy, Lukaku. I mean, for a player who scored, what was it? Sorry, I just lost my place here. He scored what? 20. It was only 16 goals. He really fell off. He fell off down the stretch, didn't he? Yeah, I can't believe he only scored 16 goals.
16 feels kind of poor to me for your marquee striker signing. I mean,
he had seven goals in his first seven matches.
Yeah. But I think his lack of just bursts of goals in games, like not being able to really, I think he only had two braces on the season, if not just one brace in the league season. For a striker at United, with the amount of attacking prowess that they're meant to have, they just weren't able to show it at all.
Yeah, I mean, well, I guess that's like, meet Jose Mourinho, though, right?
Too.
Like,
sure. You know,
I feel like we could do a whole podcast on what a weird season and kind of disappointing season it was for Man United. I've seen some people like be like, oh, you know, we finished on 81 points, which is enough to win the league in some years. But I feel like Man United fans must be a little disappointed. I mean, to finish, you know, 19 points behind
your crosstown rival.
Your crosstown rival. And then to just have a team with that much talent feel so unsettled and have all these really like talented young players who don't have any confidence anymore. And maybe you blame the players and not Mourinho. I don't know. But it feels like that team could be better than it is.
Yeah. All right. FPL Booster says, safe captain picks. Lost so much overall rank on punt picks. This is something we talked about with Jamal Rice, who finished 34 overall in the world. When we saw him in Brooklyn at the Black Horse, he said, there is great logic and many points to be gained just by identifying that one player as early as possible, Salah in this season's case, and just putting the armband on him, don't shift it around. The fewer chances you take, the more you play the probability with the captain armband, probably the better off you'll be. I don't know if that's a fun way to play the game, but it's an interesting technique. Like, how many more points do you think you'd have on this season if you just played the captain on Salah every single week?
Yeah, I mean, this stuff is always, like, easier to see in hindsight, right? I mean, I don't think, you know, most of us even captained Salah for the first time until game week 22 or something like that. You know, I mean, in hindsight, it seems so easy. But, you know, I feel like in the moment, it was very logical to captain. I don't know who FPL Booster was captaining some of these weeks, but it wasn't like I was out there captaining like Arnautovic most weeks. You know, it was Harry Kane during blank after blank, and Firmino sometimes too didn't come through. Yeah. And
you know, I love a labored metaphor, Josh.
Yes.
Do you think that Mo Salah was the pretty ugly girl from teen movies at the start of the season? Like, he had glasses on and his hair up, but everyone could see he was just the most attractive woman in the movie. But around that point where we started captaining him every week around game week 20 was when he let his hair down and everyone was like, dang, he's hot.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying I'm attracted to Mo Salah, but maybe I am. I don't know.
It was a weird mix. Yeah, I mean, a lot of people were reluctant to break. I mean, the thing was, he was priced pretty high, and so it was hard to, it felt like a big risk to bring him in. You know, I think I brought him in game week three, which I think was pretty early. I didn't quite have the guts to bring him in game week one, but I did have him by game week three. And I think, but for you, it wasn't until maybe game week 10 or 11. It was a little later in the season.
Well, sure. Let's see. We had to look. What was the game in which Salah came off the bench with like 15 minutes to play and he ends up scoring a brace? It was against Stoke City in game week 14. He played 23 minutes, scored a brace. And after that, it was like, don't let the bad man hurt me anymore. And I think I burned 8 points the following week just to get him in to stem the tide.
Yeah, I mean, it was just it was not a great FPL season for me. I think it was true for a lot of managers, but it'll always be memorable because of what Mo Salah did this year. You know, it was just, it'll always be the Mo Salah season. You know, it was like 3 years ago, it was the Harry Kane season. You know, we just had Kane. That was even more legendary in some ways because Kane was, I think he was, started the season at 5 million. I think when he started to actually get minutes, he was down to like 4.8 million.
Yeah.
I remember because that was maybe my best ever transfers. It was actually one of the years I won the league. And it was just like 4.8 million. And then he can only rise so high is the thing. So basically everyone had him, but it took about 10 weeks for everyone to finally come around. I think it was the famous Chelsea New Year's game, right? Where he finished on like 18 points or 21 points or something like that. And that was kind of like the Mo Salah Stoke game, I think, where it was just like, okay, yeah. We've got to have this guy. You got to like move mountains to bring him in if you have to.
Yeah. Yeah. All these players, there was, you know, the Mahrez Vardy season. There's a point in which you're like, this doesn't seem sustainable. You know, these players don't have, seasons in their history to show that it is sustainable. But there are players like this, like Salah and Kane, as you were saying, where you see throughout the course of the FPL game, like a true legendary player emerge. And that's,
yes,
it's fun to watch.
Yeah. I mean,
particularly once you get them in.
The famous SAS year with Sterling, Aguero, Suarez, and there's a young Raheem Sterling got a lot of minutes that year too. And, I think was that the Aaron Ramsey year too, where Aaron Ramsey was really good as well.
Very well may have been.
Yeah, that was the year when like it was just crazy point scores, because I think that was also the year when Yaya Toure scored 20 goals.
Yeah.
It was an interesting year. I wouldn't say it was a great year for low priced options in general. I mean, we talked earlier about having value in the four to five million bracket, but it wasn't like, maybe outside of Arne Tovic, I don't feel like there were just a ton of sub 7 million players who were just like tearing it up this year.
Well, the ones that were very streaky, and that was the issue. I think that's what caused everyone to pull their hair out, is to find budget value. You just had to constantly be shopping around every other week.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, looking now, I mean, the overall midfielder under 7.5 million is Pascal Gross, which, you know, it's like a good season. I mean, 7 goals and 8 assists, but it's not like, It's not even necessarily like win your league level.
It's not must-own territory.
You know, not must-own territory, exactly.
All right, Ken Rooney says, I'll try to have a little more patience with proven players. They'll get the points eventually. It's natural to spend the first few weeks scrambling around for undervalued players, but after that, I'll be trying not to spend as many transfers jumping from one flash in the pan to another. Evolution, not revolution. Shout out to Ken Rooney for having one of the best game week previews around out there for the Irish Examiner. Yes. It's a great follow on Twitter.
Everybody loves that. Yeah. If you weren't reading that during the season, definitely remember this in 3.5 months and start reading those again.
Yeah. So the I guess we were hinting at this earlier, the idea of finding the consistent players and just sticking with them, and the difficulty of this season of just hitting punts just right. I'm trying to think of one punt that worked. Maybe I got Jordan Ayew in, and I'll remember that because the game week I got him in, he scored a goal, and then the game week I got him out was after he scored his last goal of the season. So
yeah. He did give you a cheeky red card though too.
Yeah. Wow, I forgot about that. Funny how I blocked that out.
I don't know that I had a lot of, I mean, I guess Salah, we already talked about getting him early, but The player that I liked all year, it's funny how there are players you sort of court from afar during the season. And you're like, I would like, Will Zaha was a player that I really liked all year, especially mm-hmm. with the stretch. And I was like, it'd be fun to bring him in one of these days. And it didn't actually happen until game week 38. And I was rewarded with the goal. I'm really curious how he actually looks next year. I wonder if he'll, I don't think he'll leave. I mean, I think because he's already done the Man United thing, I don't know that he'll, be like itching to move on to a bigger club. But he could be really, it could be like a Gylfi Sigurdsson at Swansea type thing with him next year, where he's just like, you know, a must own player on a mediocre team.
Yeah. Let's pray it's not Gylfi Sigurdsson at Everton.
Yeah, that was bad.
All right. Sean, number one, lessons learned looking ahead to next season. Sean says, don't panic, wild card after game week 3. So I feel like you think this every year going into game week 1. I won't have to wild card until I'm really good and ready. But then you always it's like impossible to get it right out of the gate. That's what separates the 50K and the world managers from the number one manager in the world.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, it's a funny mix. It's like, be patient, but also... like, but also don't follow the herd. You know, it's like it feels like very contradictory advice. You know, it's very hard to, I don't know. It's almost as if there's different ways to play and be successful, Brandon. As hard as that is to believe. Jeff Petter says, I've already decided that I'm going anti-template at the start of next season. I wanted to this season and bottled it as I got closer. We all bottle it, Jeff. We all think we're going to go
anti-template. Get cold feet.
Yeah, and he's still wild carded in the first 4 weeks anyway. So next season I'm starting off with a fun team, within reason, of course. He's already hedgy. I love this. He's like, I'm going anti-template. I mean, not crazy, but you know, it's, and by next season it'll be like, you know, 8 out of your 11 will be template. Okay, this is one thing we always say at the start of the podcast, like when we do our 10 rules for Feel Success podcast, but it's like you almost never, I feel like people worry too much about being template. You know, I do think down the stretch, you know, like the way it's worked out when everybody wild cards in game week 34, like that is a little template, but I feel like for the first 30 weeks or so, I feel like no one's team looks the same, right? I mean, yeah, sure, we all have like the top 5 or 6 players maybe, but I feel like there's always different players, you know? I don't know.
Yep. Yeah. Jeff is one of those managers where he's so, enmeshed in the FPL world. He has that 360 view of FPL where basically he sees everything. And I find myself doing this all the time too. Like, I can see all the options. And once you see all the options in front of you, how do you choose?
Well, this is what, it's like I was saying earlier. I mean, it's when you, once you realize that there's no right way to be successful, there's no like one perfect path. It becomes very hard to make the right decision because each decision could work out, you know? And so I do think that means that you should just, okay. I mean, I guess the obvious answer is just play in a way that's fun. But for me, winning is fun,
sure.
you know? And so I've always, so it's like play to your personality. Okay. Or play the way you want. But for me, if I make a bunch of, you know, if I like burn 8 every week and I keep losing more and more points, I'm just going to continue to have less and less fun.
Yeah.
So, you know,
well, Crystal Palace is a great example of this for me. And so bias is one of those huge hurdles that we have to get by. I watch the way we've talked way too much about Patrick Van Aanholt over the season on this podcast or Zaha. For me, not my cup of tea. Don't like how those players play. And I just, it's sort of like my lizard FPL brain looks at those players and say, nope, don't like, don't want. And those are hurdles that really stand. Maybe that's a fun way to play, to not get the players in that you don't like. But right. if winning is fun, sometimes you have to accept the fact that you have to bring players into your squad that you don't like.
It was funny because we talked about Patrick Redenhall like way too much on last week's podcast. And you know, when he scored and assisted and got the clean sheet and got 3 bonus points in game week 38, I was like, how many game week, like next season, how many weeks in a row would he have to score before Brandon would think about bringing him in? Like, if Patrick Van Aanholt scored like the first 7 games, would you have
begrudgingly
to
consider, right? I'd bring him in.
Right, exactly.
On a wild card.
On a wild card, yeah.
All right, last comment comes from Gavin Doyle on lessons learned, how we're approaching next season. Gavin says, I think at 69 transfers for the season, I may have been a tad too trigger happy. I think amazing. It started off well with Gavin. He mentioned he was, I think, in the top 25K at the start of the season, ended up finishing around 160K. So, yeah, there comes a point where 69 transfers might be too many, Gavin.
I think I finished on 43 for the season. Is that, do you remember how many transfers you finished on?
Yeah,
46. Wow, it's a little higher than I was expecting.
42 for me. I think I ended up getting a little more transfer happy toward the end of the season. Panic was setting in.
Yeah, I feel like this year you were doing a lot of trying to hold a transfer over a game week, you know, and having two for the next one. And
yeah,
do you think that worked out?
No, I don't, because the idea there was always I don't feel confident in the decision I could make this week, so I'm going to hold on for one more week for more information. And the fact is, no new information really ever came to me.
Right. Yeah, it's true, because often what holds you back is the same thing that's going to hold you back the next week. You know, it's
Or the person that I should have gotten in and ends up, well, whatever, we could go on. I ended up missing out on points by being too patient.
I was surprised that I made 46 transfers. That seems very high for me. That's, what is that, 8 point hits then, right? 38 game weeks, you know. Well, not counting two wild cards as well. So I guess, does that mean I took 10 point hits this year? That has to be a record for me. I do not usually take point hits. I don't think they... Jay Agersdorf, you know, is very much not a point hit person in general. And he's really gotten in my head about that. And so I really made a point this year not to make point hits. And yet, here I am with a record number. So, you know, who knows? I don't know. There's different ways to play the game, Brandon.
Absolutely. All right, let's take a quick break. We're going to come back and talk about not how we can change, Josh, because we can't change. We'll talk about how we can change the FPL game.
Excellent. Same old podcast, always cheating. Brandon, we're back, and it would not be a podcast without mentioning our friends at Starting 11. I don't even think we're allowed to record a podcast. I think the terms of our parole agreement, Brandon, state that we have to mention Starting 11 every
time. Nobody wants us to go back to jail. Those were the least fun FPL podcasts we've ever recorded, is the ones in our prison cell.
Our Folsom prison episode. So Starting 11 is going to be here for the World Cup. Now, there are some... Really, I think there's the perfect way to play the World Cup this summer, right? I'm using air quotes that nobody can see except
the PWC, Perfect World Cup. That's how I like to refer to it.
PWC, exactly. One is to become a Patreon supporter, do the set and forget thing, pick some teams and root for those teams. The second one, Brandon, because I don't know about you, but I need some juice. I need like a little. I really need to feed my little action. I need some players.
Every slogan from the X Games that there ever was. You're going to do the do. You're going to feed the beast. You have no fear.
I want to take on some people in some head-to-head matches. I want to pick some players. I want Mo Salah to score, and I want it to win me actual money. So, Brandon, how do you do that?
You play Starting 11. You download the app to your iOS or Android phone. Go to either one of those app stores or just go to starting11.io. All the information and the links are right there. So Starting 11 is rolling out a special game just for the World Cup, as you said, Josh, and they're going to have more details here imminently. And how convenient is that? It's right there on your phone. You can make live in-game substitutions. You can change your lineups even before the game starts, so you're not stuck with some player that hasn't been named to the Starting 11. So fantastic, beautiful interface, and it should be even better for the World Cup.
Yeah. And thanks to everyone that we played on Starting 11 this season. You know, just this last week, you and I actually we both kind of played the same people. It's kind of like they had a celebratory air too. We played Andy Gidlin and Gibran Chada and
James Bishop, and James new Bishop Patreon and, subscriber. Thanks, James.
As well as Stephen Toomey and John Erik Torstensen, who actually won a contest and renamed your team for a while.
Yeah, so. The Flint City Rollers or Patriots, or it was
Flint City Patriots. Yep. So visit starting11.io and keep an eye out, because they're rolling out that World Cup game very soon. I think it's within the next several days. So keep an eye out for that. And in the meantime, visit starting11.io to learn more about the game and to see the beautiful interface, Brandon, because it's aesthetically a very enjoyable game to play.
Eye-catching.
All right.
Josh, we are back with what should be an award-winning segment throughout the season, the always cheating lightning round, and we're going to answer a bunch of listener questions or sort of comment, provide commentary on listener notes on bonus points, chips, and changes that we'd like to see made to the game heading into next season. So we're going to tackle bonus points first. Lazaro says, BAPs are a dumpster fire. Any change or tweak would be welcome. I have resisted this conversation on the podcast, but Josh, you are highly aggravated by the way bonus points have been dealt out this season.
Well, I'm not even highly aggravated. I mean, it just, you know, I mean, Michael DiPietro just said, you know, they just don't seem to reward players properly. The best players should accumulate the most bonus points. Right. It shouldn't be so confusing. This is definitely a year where the bonus point system was a little screwy. I mean, someone pointed out the famous the game where Swansea lost 5-0 and Fabianski ended up on 2 bonus points because he saved a meaningless penalty. And it did feel like things were just a little like it basically, it, you know, it was a season.
It feels like things were objective as opposed to subjective.
It just feels like this was a year for an attacking style of play. And, you know, if you're going to attack a lot, you're also going to you're going to be offside. You're going to probably commit more fouls. You're going to have shots off target. And those things really hurt some of the top players. I think the other factor was just that there were a lot of players who were classified as midfielders and probably should have been classified as forwards. You know, I'm actually going to jump down to a question here, Brian, because I think it's relevant to this. FPL Nick says, I think they need to change the formation positions. Big question on who will be reclassified next season, but the game needs to reflect modern football. Instead of a defensive midfielder attacking, there needs to be 4 outfield positions, defensive midfielder, attacker, and striker, reflecting a 4-2-3-1 formation. I actually think that's kind of an interesting idea. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I love that. I mean, it makes the game even more multidimensional. Not that we need like even more dimensions at this point, well, with the chips and everything. But I would love to, instead of, you know, fielding these rigid positions, including goalkeeper, having some kind of wild card-ish attacking position that could be a winger, or some sort of Arnautovic type of role is interesting. Yeah,
it is interesting. And, you know, and maybe there is maybe a formation like that would actually reward the N'Golo Kante, Nemanja Matic types in a way that the game really doesn't right now.
The huge thing for me with the bonus point discussion is they need to have actual FPL points, not BAPs, but FPL points for tackles. And even KDB, though he was a huge point getter in this FPL season, he was doing so much work in the midfield tackling, and he accrued a lot of bonus points because of that, completed passes and tackles. But it would be amazing to see players accumulate, like goalkeepers do, a point for 3 saves, a point for 3 tackles, or even 2 tackles.
Yeah, or 10 completed passes.
So, and I think that solves multiple problems, because that's a problem that BPS is trying to solve and clearly is not. And it also helps us field more different types of midfielders in our team.
Yeah, because I think this is what it boils down to. I mean, the discussion that, you know, that we've had, and I don't actually totally disagree with you. You know, your argument sort of in defense of the bonus point system is that it does reward these players, at least in theory, it rewards them. And, you know, but the problem is it doesn't reward them enough. You know, like you ultimately still can't play N'Golo Kante on a regular basis in your FPL. You know, like the kind of players who should be rewarded by this system aren't, it's not going quite far enough to reward them. So you end up in this weird sort of middle ground where, you know, the player who ends up getting the most bonus points is like an attacking mid who maybe only has one, who gets an assist in the game, a KDB type. And it's not like, you know, I mean, KDB was arguably the best player in the league this year, probably second best player after Salah. So KDB should be getting tons of points. But I mean, you know, I was joking on Twitter this weekend that it was sort of fitting that in the final game of the season, Mo Salah ends up with a goal, assist, and no bonus points.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
You know, just because of all the sort of negative things that he did.
Yeah. Adam P on our Slack channel said something that I agree with. As it is, bonus points are totally objective. It's data driven. You know, complaining about it, in my view, is generally sour grapes on social media. Uh-huh. Like, I had this player and they didn't get rewarded.
It's very rare that someone like complains about a player they didn't have in their team.
I am wary of it becoming going back to that man in the stands routine. But I do agree with you. What you're saying is, in effect, no one is being served by the bonus points. Like, the attacking players aren't being fully rewarded, and then the players who are meant to come to the fore because of it, like the defensive mids, aren't either. So what's the story? And I'm kind of at the point where, well, what's the point? If you're asking to reward players who are getting points with more points, then what's the point? Just do away with bonus points.
Yeah, I'm sort of in favor of bonus points because I think it's fun. I think it's a fun thing to keep an eye on as the game progresses. I would like to see actual points awarded for more things as well. I think it makes sense that I think assists should be worth more points.
Yeah.
You know, I think they should be worth more than three. I feel like goalkeepers still get a little screwed in the system in general. And there could be a way to, I guess there's only so many actions that they commit, which is probably why it's hard to really properly credit.
How about a goalkeeper gets a point every time they take a sip from their water bottle? I mean, that would bring Joe Hart would be worth having, even if he only plays five games a season.
There were a couple people who had questions, just sort of going on with this, sort of tied in with this a little bit, M. Bison and James Bishop both had questions about giving extra points for consecutive goals in a match. What do you think about that? So like of a Kane hat trick, it'd be four points for the first goal, 5 points for the second, 6 points for the third, and so on.
It's like getting an escalator in your royalties contract. that sounds kind of terrifying to me. I mean, if for anyone, okay, so my season basically turned on Aguero's four goal game in which I didn't have him and so many people captained him. That's where it all fell apart for me. The sinking feeling you have when that happens to you is bad enough, but then to see this crazy escalation, I guess you're right. It plays into the bonus point conversation as well, because the weighting of attacking points is really that is where FPL lies. That is how FPL works, how the attacking points are weighted. And I think if you start doing that, does that drive us to more template driven teams, where if there is the threat that Harry Kane does this, then there's you have to have him. And at least in this season, while Kane scored 30 goals, which is crazy, you didn't have to have him for long stretches.
Who's really capable of scoring braces, right? We're talking about like five to 10 players on a consistent basis. I actually agree with you. I'm not really in favor of that as a move. I just thought it was interesting that multiple people suggested that. Here's one change that I wouldn't mind seeing. It was while we're still talking about bonus points. What do you think about just no negative actions being punished? Like, just if you're offside, you don't lose bonus points. If you have a shot off target, you don't lose bonus points. If you commit a foul, you don't lose. I don't really love the way you lose points for that. If you miss a clear goal scoring opportunity, it feels like sometimes there's, I just feel like a lot of times it's very context dependent. And I feel like Mo Salah had a couple of these like clear goal scoring opportunities that he missed. And, you know, watching those games in real time, it feels like it wasn't always the case. You know, it was like he was so good that he was in a position where he was actually able to get this ball over four defenders and, you know, catch it off his chest. And, yeah, he was one-on-one with the keeper, but he'd also sprinted about 35 yards in, 10 seconds. And, you know, he was going at full speed. You know, is that a quick goal scoring opportunity or is that just a brilliant move that he couldn't quite finish off? And, you know, he was punished for that kind of thing consistently this season. And I just... You know, it didn't seem right to me.
It's an interesting question, but I mean, you're asking for justice, and I don't live in a world in which there is justice, so I think you just need to get over it.
Maybe you're right. I guess scrubbing the bonus point system would probably be the best way to do it. But I do like I love checking the real time BABs. I mean, who doesn't, right?
At least this argument goes the entire other direction. If you stop. Disciplining people for negative actions, then you're complaining about, well, Lukaku got bonus points, but he was offside like five times and he's a total troll job.
I don't know.
Bonus points are messed up.
Someone would do that, but you would never see me complain about offsides. I mean, my beloved, who was this one? Bafétimbi Gomis. Yeah,
huh?
The amazing Mr. Offside himself, yeah. And I still loved him, despite being offside 10 to 15 times every match.
All right, let's talk about chips, Josh. We have a question from Lego Mane. One new chip he's suggesting for next season, perhaps a double defense chip. So maybe you get double points for all your defense.
Yep. I have suggested this before. I love the idea of this chip. Yeah. This is my one of my pet chip ideas.
Lego Mane is going a step further. So now you've got four chips in total if you take your current chips plus perhaps a double defense chip. Two of these chips must be used in the first half. Two must be used in the second half. But otherwise, you're free to choose which two and when. This could lead to variation in chip strategy. And I think this is something we've touched upon in previous episodes, Josh, is the idea of forcing people to use some chips in the first half. Because as it is now, we're all waiting until game week 35 to unveil our first chip.
This can't be this is one of those things where you do have to take a step back and realize that we're talking about a subset of top managers or experienced managers who are doing this. I mean, I think the reason that chips are even in the game is to goose it for people who don't take the game very seriously and just want to roll out a triple captain in game week one. But they're hurt by this too, you know? And I would advocate for just getting rid of the chips entirely. I don't actually think they help the game.
No.
Do you?
I don't.
Do you
think I agree. I'm not prepared to be militant about it.
Nor am I.
Particularly as us who sort of live and breathe within an FPL community that uses the chips as fuel many weeks just to keep the conversation going. The chips can be fun, but I guess I tend to agree on the whole. The chips create.
I feel like it created some very tedious arguments. Like instead of talking about who was doing well and who wasn't doing well in the transfer, and it became a very theoretical game at times the second half of the season, and especially with the free hit chip, which really changed things. It almost changed things too much. I don't know. I mean, to get back to Lego Mane's suggestion, if we keep chips, I like the idea of some chips being forced to be used in the second half, and maybe or in the first half and the second half, maybe two in each is just a cleaner way to roll that out, you know, than you have to use one of these three. But if it's you've got two, maybe they even tell you which two they are, right?
Yeah.
Maybe it's just two chips next year. It's just triple captain just triple captain and free hit. And you can use those two chips twice, you know, one in the first 20 weeks and one in the second 20 weeks.
Yeah.
And then that's it, you know, and I just think that would really mix things up a lot. It would be the only thing I just feel like it would be a little fluky, you know, it would you'd really have to nail those. But maybe fluky's OK. I mean, you know, I don't know. Like, is it so bad if someone flukes into a great score?
Is that not happening already, Joshua?
Yeah, it has happened already. Exactly.
JJ online is taking the same tack of a chips encouraged template, thinking the game was better before myriad chips. We have another chip idea from Nath Matthews, who suggests two captains in 1 week. So
I've never heard that chip idea. That's actually that's a fun one.
Yeah, and that would be an exceptional one for a double game week. I mean, the triple captain is favored in the double game week, but you're putting all your eggs in one basket, effectively. The idea of spreading the probability to two different captain material. And I like that idea of you're going, maybe you give one armband to an assist guy like Eriksen, and you give the other armband to a goal scorer like Sterling.
Yeah. Yeah, this is your dream. I feel like you would love it if you could do this. If you could have one foot in both waters, you know.
A guy who hates making decisions like me, it's a dream come true.
Okay. Here's my suggestion. I'm going off the board here for a second. I would move the wild card back to the January wild card. Do you think? I don't know. I don't want to get too grumpy. Oh, it was better back in the day. I really don't. I think that's too negative. But don't you think it was a little more fun when game week 30, when all the double game weeks would roll around and everybody didn't have a wild card in their pocket, and then everybody didn't have the exact same team going into these doubles?
Yeah.
It just There was too much of that this year. I mean, it was like on Twitter, people would be like, rate my team. And I was like, well, just look at the other eight teams that have been rated. They're all, it's exactly the same team. Like maybe we got like a different 4.2 million defender or something.
But there were even other commenters who didn't say rate my team. They would just come right out and say, who are the best 15 players to get? Right, exactly. Make my team for me.
You're never going to get totally away from groupthink, but usually you can't just change your whole team wholesale like that, you know.
And I don't want to throw too much shade at the people out there who are looking for help because
of course not.
I mean, we all need that help, and it is, and I think it stems from the culture that we are talking about of pressurizing the strategy around the doubles and the chips and et cetera.
Yeah, which effectively means that you don't have chips until game week 32 or so. You know, like you basically, you might as well not, they might as well not be like available to you. Like, so, like, because it's such a, generally such a folly to use those chips early on in the season. And that just doesn't seem like the best. It makes the game a little like less elegant to me or something, you know, like to have these kind of fluky things that you throw in the final few weeks of the season.
Jabron Chadha is going to take your wild card idea, Josh, and take it one step further. Jabron suggests one wild card throughout the entire season, and you can only use it in January.
I hate that idea. I'd rather have five wild cards in the first half of the season.
We need more forgiveness, not less forgiveness.
Yeah, exactly. That first wild card is always like your lifeline, you know, just like, give it to me.
And listen, the first wild card, I think it's don't it's fine to play it. It's kind of there for me to actually really set your game week one squad because you don't know. Mm-hmm. You just don't know what's going to happen in game week one. And that wild card is there to forgive all your Alex Iwobi, Ryan Frazier sins.
All right, Brandon. It's been 38 weeks. We've done about 347 hours of podcasts. We have one final suggestion, one final thing to change before we take a short break, before we come back for some World Cup pods. It comes from Frankie the Gent, who says, I would like to see free transfers rolled up beyond two, maybe to four or five. This would mix up strategies. What do you think about that, Brennan? Having more than two transfers.
Listen, who out there didn't have the rollover minutes plan on their cell phone years ago, basically before there were no minutes didn't exist anymore? And all those ads about rollover minutes were basically just preaching logic. Like you didn't use these minutes, just roll over as many as you want to. And I am all for it for free transfers.
Despite the fact that you said earlier that it didn't work out for you rolling over even one transfer.
Well, that's,
you think you just kept piling them up. Like
that's because two transfers often is never enough. Like if you're concerned one transfer is going to be enough, two is probably also not going to be enough. And if you're talking about four or five wild cards, Josh, that would be your dream scenario. Effectively, this is what Frankie is suggesting. I don't know. I guess I can see it both ways. What you're fond of saying, Josh, about the FPL game is often the bug is a feature. And just being able to roll up two transfers is probably a feature and not a bug. That's what sort of keeps everyone honest with their transfer policies and probably keeps us from having templates across the board. If you're able to for free get in all these great players within a few weeks.
Yeah, that is a good point. You know, other things that I wouldn't mind seeing. I mean, I don't see any reason why you need to restrict your. What do you think about having more than three players from any one team? Like, what do you, you know? Just I know I said that was our last question, but one thing I was thinking
that
about
was our last question for the listeners. We'll just keep. I've got nowhere to go, Josh. We can keep talking.
Well, I mean, you know, in theory, you know, why can't an Arsenal fan have a starting 11 of all Arsenal players? You know, like, would Man City ruin that? But it really wouldn't, right? I mean, would it be so bad if you could have five Man City players? I mean, the rotation would kill you. So,
yeah.
I don't know. It wouldn't necessarily be like this dream team anyway.
Well, okay. So my counterpoint to that would be teams that are just crushing everyone. And if you're say you're a Huddersfield fan, you should be able to at least have one or two Huddersfield players in your FPL squad and not just get completely decimated for it. Because if you're then able to turn around and have, you know, 11 players from Manchester City, you're going to roll over all those Huddersfield fans.
Yeah. You wouldn't be able to afford them anyway, though. You know, you'd still need the cheaper. It'd be easier to field a full 11 of Huddersfield players, I guess.
Yeah.
I wonder if a full starting 11 of Man City players would be more expensive than 100 million. It probably would be, right?
Yeah, I would assume so. I mean, unless you're going Gundogan, Fernandinho as your key midfielders.
Hey, that's a wonderful. That's a great pivot there, Brandon. Those are some solid players.
Yeah, I guess parity. Everyone loves the Premier League for its sort of perceived parity. Huddersfield can beat Manchester United in any given week. So let's keep the parity in FPL.
I know people talk about the top six dominance. Like have you seen the other leagues in Europe? Like Juve always wins the Italian league. I mean, Spain is at least you basically have two teams, occasionally three. You know, France is completely dominated by PSG. Like six seems pretty good to me. You know,
sure.
I mean, Bayern Munich's won like 17 Bundesligas in a row. Like,
yeah.
You know, I'll take six. So you know.
Absolutely. Okay, so that's the season in a nutshell. Have we done
it? That's it. Yeah, I think that's it. I think I'm ready for a few weeks off. I'm ready to enjoy the rest of May and not sit in this room when it gets hot. And,
yeah,
I'm ready. I'm looking forward to a little break.
Yeah. We need a break, but stay tuned. As you mentioned, Josh, we're going to be back doing some podcasts surrounding the World Cup. And be sure to support us on patreon.com/alwayscheating if you want to play our exclusive Pick 8 Teams World Cup game. It should be a lot of fun. And follow us on social media, at Hail Cheaters on Twitter, facebook.com/alwayscheating, or hit us up with an email, hailcheaters@gmail.com, if you want more information about what we're up to this summer. If you're just checking out for the summer, you're going to go learn how to farm or become some sort of oil painter.
Yeah, do some 4-H. Yeah.
Do something like that. Then good for you. We'll see you back in July, I guess, like mid to late July, when our preview pods for whenever the FPL game launches. That's usually when we come back into the fray for FPL.
Remember to rate and review the podcast on iTunes, if nothing else, because it really helps us to build the audience, and that more than anything is what we just really want to do with the podcast, because it's fun to do, but it's even more fun to do when people are actually listening to you. So if you do that, that'd be great. Otherwise, have a great summer. Hopefully we'll see many of you for the World Cup, and let's see Lord Sorloth dominate the league next year.
It's all set up for Sorloth. I know he can do it.
I think he can too. Hail Sorloth.
Yeah, bring Poku to the Premier League. I predict a big transfer window for Poku. All right, Poku forever.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for a great season, everyone.
Agreed.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE system technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.